Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget your machete as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
Monsteropolis, home to monsters, legends, and anomalies. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined by my glorious, happy, merry co-host, Mark Matzke.
Wow. Merry.
Merry.
I don't know if I've ever been described as merry, but...
It's appropriate. You're usually smiling.
You'll tide greetings to all.
I was gonna start to engage you in another Godzilla conversation, but I realized by the time this episode comes out, that'll be old hat. Like, it'll have been out 2 weeks, 3 weeks at that point. So, this week's episode, before we go any further, we are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and we covet and need your reviews and ratings on iTunes and all that stuff. So, if you're out there send those reviews. You can also send us mail, monsteropolismail@gmail.com.
Do we have any mail yet?
I haven't checked.
Oh, okay.
There might be.
And do we have an Instagram? Is that a thing?
No.
Okay. Well,
there is, but I'm not in it. I started one, but I don't know where it is.
The reviews that we've gotten so far have been really complimentary.
On
iTunes.
I haven't even looked.
Really?
Where are we at? Like 2 stars?
No, we've five stars, and they're all nice things.
Has anyone called us self-absorbed urban fools?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
You
but
can
I'm
be the first review to refer to us as self-absorbed urban fools, which was our all-time favorite review for our old podcast, Sass What, which was left in absolute seriousness
by a
certain individual. So anyway, this week we're going to talk about Krampus.
The Krampuslauf, it's a very old tradition. It's 500 years back. Santa Nicholas, it's the good guy. And the Krampus, it's the bad guy. All the children are a little bit worried about Krampus because they know when he will come, they have done something bad over the year. The Krampus, in history, it was very popular. Then it stopped for a long time. And nowadays, the young people finding the tradition again and living this tradition.
The best thing about this show, as opposed to something like Sasquatch, I had great, great memories of Sasquatch. We had a blast recording Sasquatch. But we can go down any kind of rabbit trail on this show, and that is something that appeals greatly to me. So
that's a beautiful thing.
I don't know which one of us suggested Krampus.
I think it was you.
Okay. But it allows us to do things like Krampus and what we're going to be talking about next week, which is Christmas ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
Or ghostly Christmases or whatever we're doing with that.
Yuletide haunts.
Yuletide haunts. Yeah. We can make a lot of money with a haunted, like a Christmas-themed haunted house called Yuletide haunts. Come to Wadsworth, Ohio. The Krampus, the reason I suggested this is mostly so we can talk about the movie by Michael Dougherty.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you seen the movie?
I knew that this day was coming. I have not seen it, so, which I now, I have double reason for seeing it.
Yeah, I own it. And I'm not, we've talked at great length. I'm actually not a huge horror movie fan. And I did not like Dougherty's first movie very much, Hide and Seek, but Although it makes sense, I love Krampus because the thing I did love about Hide and Seek was the creature effects and the creature designs. I think that guy's got such a cool eye for design. But anyway, Krampus the movie is now like my tradition, my holiday, my Christmas tradition.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've bought it and I've watched it the last 2 years, and I'm pretty psyched up to introduce Tommy to it in a couple of years.
Is it an anthology?
No. No,
that must have been something else.
Hide and Seek was an anthology.
Oh, okay. I got him.
Trick or Treat, not Hide and Seek. Have I been calling it Hide and Seek?
Hide and Seek, yeah.
It's Trick or Treat. Hide and Seek's the sequel coming out next year.
Right.
Check it out. Small Town Monsters Presents.
I thought you signed a non-disclosure about that.
Anyway, yeah, Krampus, it's like somewhere between Gremlins and Silent Night, Deadly Night. Like it's pretty dark, like for a kid's movie, but at the same time I feel like a family can enjoy it, and it's not, you know, it's not blood, there's no blood and guts and that kind of thing. So it's something where I think a family could enjoy it, and someone like Andy who loves creatures and monsters is going to really enjoy the monsters in it. Like the creature effects and the creature designs are really cool. It's one of those. It kind of reminds me of how I feel about Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow movie.
Oh.
Where the design of the movie kind of overrides any story imperfections, which there are many.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also kind of funny. It's like...
Is it all practical effects?
There's a lot of practical effects. I think it's predominantly practical effects.
Yeah, cool.
I know for certain Krampus himself is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually like the least memorable of the designs in the movie. He's
really?
Probably the least memorable. Yeah.
Wow.
He's creepy, but it's not a memorable design.
Okay.
But it's a great movie. I really recommend it. And the music for it has a very old school Danny Elfman, Tim Burton kind of vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And visually it really is like Doherty, like I said, like he's got an eye for that kind of design stuff, and he has a very specific visual sense, which brings me around back to Godzilla.
Yeah, good.
Real quick.
Good.
The thing that hit me with this trailer that didn't in the last is he seems to be doing, I can't recall seeing visuals that look like this in another movie where the framing is so wide and massive in scope. And assumedly, so you can kind of catch the monsters like within the world that we inhabit. In that frame, I've just never seen that kind of the image that stands out is the one of Ghidorah with where you first kind of see it, and there's this very wide shot, and the other one is the who's flying over the city and everything's
oh
turning
yeah Rodan
flying around. Do you know the shot I'm talking about where it's almost overhead, kind of looking
yes.
down at? I mean that kind of other than something like Pacific Rim. I can't recall that kind of like scope on screen and the framing.
Right.
And all that
with you
the
saw
screen.
That tweet he put out, right? Where he's talking about having a camcorder and his Shogun Warrior figures.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, that's been his dream. And okay. I think that's really, you're going to see that. It's like every kid who's ever played with monster action figures and thought about movie scenes and stuff like that's what this is going to be.
See,
with the biggest possible
budget.
The
coolest thing about that, and Adam Wingard and I talked about this while I was out there.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest thing for a director to do on one of these massive budgeted movies is getting any version of their story or their visuals or whatever into the final movie, because you are dealing with boards of, you know, the suits and ties that want to tell you what to do. And you're also dealing with multiple artists who had their own vision for how things can be. And so for someone like Doherty to get in there and actually do what he wanted to do to begin with, that's the kind of stuff always really impresses me, especially in big budgeted Hollywood movies.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta turn this volume up a little bit, I think.
Okay.
So if you're listening and suddenly it gets louder, that's why. I try to keep it. This is why we need this is why I prefer to record at the radio, is because here I have to play producer and there Tom just sets everything up and then we go to town. So anyway, Krampus, let's talk about Krampus. What did you learn about Krampus?
What did I learn?
You did no research for this episode, did you?
No, I've got a lot of research.
Oh, I didn't
actually.
Okay. I thought you did all you shot your wad on the
That's actually the Abominable Snowman was the least that I really got
because you knew it all.
No. There's too much, actually. I feel like there's so much Yeti stuff that it's, I don't know.
I mean,
there's tons of stuff there.
Some of these subjects like Yeti, we could almost devote a month to that. So in the future, maybe if I say something like, let's do an episode about the Jersey Devil or the Yeti, we could just say, let's do a month about the... Because like the Jersey Devil, we never got into all the different accounts, all the different like eyewitness sightings.
Yeah, modern sightings.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah. Krampus. So, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Krampus is, you know, if you think of St. Nicholas as the good cop, Krampus is the bad cop. So they kind of, in German and Austrian folklore, they kind of have the 1-2 punch of, you know, you're either going to get rewarded by St. Nicholas or you're going to get punished by Krampus. And Krampus is, in many ways, an amalgamation of the devil and satyrs and fauns and wild men, kind of all thrown in a blender. And I mean, what's really fun, and you probably did this too in preparing for this episode, you just Google Krampus and search images and all the cards that come out and images of Krampus.
We had a card sent to us by Chad Lewis.
Did you really?
Our Christmas card was a Krampusnacht. Is that how you...
Krampusnacht?
Krampusnacht.
Yes.
It was a Krampusnacht card. But yeah, the visual stuff connected with Krampus is very memorable. Especially the older, the better.
Yep.
And
so
more demented.
Yes. And incidentally, I mean, the cards is sort of what led to the resurgence of Krampus, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. But like, so throughout Europe, you've got all these sorts of figures that sort of walk hand in hand with religious traditions. So in Germany and Austria, it's Krampus. Other areas, you've got these great names like Belsnickel.
Yes, I'm glad. Okay.
And my personal favorite, Necht Ruprecht.
Okay.
Which if I were forming
a
band.
Right here. Look at this. Yeah.
If I were to form a band, I would totally be Necht Ruprecht.
So
we would punk out.
My favorite thing about Belsnickel is that this is a Pennsylvania Dutch character who I had actually heard Belsnickel before, but I didn't realize it was a Pennsylvania Dutch thing. And it upsets me that I never asked my grandpa about it because he was Amish and like came from that whole community. I'm sure they had their stories, but Belsnickel. So this is what I got on Belsnickel. A few nights before Christmas, a rap would come at your door. A cross-looking man wearing furs would step through the door. He held a hickory switch in one hand and a sack laden with candy and nuts in the other. One by one, he called the children in the house forward and asked them to recite a poem, a Bible verse, or math equations.
Whoa.
He'd warn them to behave. Then he'd toss the goodies on the floor. But woe to children who forgot their manners and greedily dove for the candy and nuts. They might feel the sting of the switch on their backs. Call him the dark side of Santa, but Der Belsnickel's job was to remind little ones that they still had time left, or that they still had little time left to behave before the benevolent St. Nicholas would arrive on Christmas Eve. A visit from the Belsnickel was just as common as a visit from St. Nick about 125 years ago in Pennsylvania, German regions of the Lehigh Valley. Through history, the Belsnickel took different forms. Most familiar is the dark, tattered man in furs who carries a switch and candy. Second figure was more animal-like and wore a mask with horns or a tongue. And that sounds more like Krampus.
Right.
Which, it is weird. There's many of these, like, dark Santa figures throughout the world, which I think is really interesting. And I was only kind of made aware of that fact in the last few years. I think probably with the popularity of Krampus.
Right.
How do you say that? Connect?
Knecht Ruprecht.
Talk about that character. That character seems more tied to Krampus, right? Because they're both from Germany.
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, Belsnickel and Ruprecht both, it must be said that those are more just like guys. You know, they have long black
dudes.
Beards,
yeah, they're not,
and they have switches, and they'll beat you if you're bad.
Yeah.
But it's not the same sort of demonic monster that Krampus seems to
be. And Krampus seems to have originated with like paganism. It was around long before sort of the modern, the European take on Christmas.
Yeah.
Something I just learned today that I thought was really interesting is Krampus is supposed to be the son of Hel.
Correct.
Hela, the obviously
youngest daughter of Loki.
Youngest daughter of Loki, but more popular known as one of Thor's arch enemies in the Marvel comics, as everyone knows her.
Right, ruler of the realm of the dead.
Yeah, which I didn't know. Krampus is supposed to be her son, so I thought that was kind of a cool tie that I was completely unaware of. I'm also a little unclear on how, well, I guess those two tie together because of the Vikings and the Vikings.
Yeah. And it's really super intriguing because it's one other way that you have the history of really the ancient church sort of co-opting what people were already doing in pagan observance, if you want to call it that, and bringing it into Christianity and sort of rebranding it. So instead of telling people you can't do any of that stuff anymore, what they would instead do is just bring something in and give it kind of a new twist. And that really is the case with Krampus. I mean, that you look at, depending on the source, you know, it suggests that he's been a counterpart to St. Nicholas for, you know, as long as 1,500 years. So that really... Now, there's a history there of ups and downs of acceptance of Krampus, like officially from the church's sanctioned standpoint. And historians tell us that by the 12th century, Catholics wanted to get rid of Krampus altogether. Not sure why. Except
I mean, it is weird. Unless they think it's the popularity of the character would somehow override.
I suspect that that's it.
But it's interesting because he's almost the... He's essentially a picture of, in a way, this could get offensive to some people, but don't you feel like in a way that Santa is in some strange way sort of a, what's the word I'm looking at? Like an exemplary character of, or an example of Christ or something like that. I mean, it's a saint. It's got this whole
no
thing.
Doubt. Santa, yeah, he functions as a secular Christ figure.
Sure. And then that makes Krampus the sort of secular figure for Satan.
Right.
And so to me, it makes sense that there would be, you would have the, you know, the antithesis of Santa Claus in Krampus, who literally comes into homes and stuffs children in a sack.
Yes.
And carries them off or just beats them mercilessly. Like there's two. So, like, do we even go into... I mean, because by now Krampus is so popular, I feel like we might have skipped over who Krampus even is, but is the Christmas devil, is commonly referred to literally as the Christmas devil. Krampus beats naughty children with a bundle of birch sticks and swings around a chain and bells. With horns, fangs, two hooves, and an ultra-long tongue, he bears a striking resemblance to the satyrs, like you said, of Greek mythology. And he's said to be the son of Hel, goddess of the North underworld. So, and he's accompanied by some strange characters as well. Some of it gets a little into the racism and things like that.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We jumped off. We started talking about Belsnickel and then leapt off of Connect Ruprecht.
Yeah.
Do you want to get back to that? Because there are similarities between the two, such as the fact that one of the versions of Connect is that he has horns like Krampus. He comes out of the forest at Christmas time, a dark elf, to help St. Nicholas. So it's a little like I get the feeling that Krampus and old St. Nick would probably tangle. You know, like really fight it out if needed, but Connect seems to be there almost as a helper to Santa.
Right.
In a demented way.
Yeah, and you get that sense too just in practice because, you know, Krampusnacht is December 5th.
December 5th.
And then Saint Nicholas 6th. Is the 6th. So they're even sort of separate in their approaches. Whereas with Ruprecht you get the sense that he's almost like a Igor.
Are those holidays, like, are those actual holidays that are celebrated in Germany or in Austria, I'm assuming? Okay.
Yeah, and the practice of it today mostly consists of leaving your shoe in sort of an outside area and overnight. And whatever, you know, it gets left there. If you're bad, then there's like a switch or a stick. And if you've been good, then there's candy and treats in your shoes. So that's what it consists of mostly. There's also the Krampuslauf, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Let's just talk about it now.
Talk about it now.
I want to know what it is.
What is the Krampuslauf?
Yeah.
It is sort of like an evil 5K.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say it's the run. It's like the Santa run
guys,
or whatever.
Guys get drunk, dress up like Krampus, and just run around.
This is bad news. Like I was reading about... So I was, during my deep dive into Krampus today, I was reading about this, and it can get violent. It turns violent.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
These guys are they have sticks, and they're allowed or no one cares if they hit people with them. Mm-hmm. And apparently, like one of the areas I was reading about, a firsthand account of... accidentally finding themselves in the midst of one of these Krampuslauf. They found themselves in essentially what amounted to like a very small alleyway.
Oh.
And you couldn't get out, and these people were terrified. The Krampuses were beating people.
They got beat.
Yeah.
Oh man.
With their sticks, and it can get pretty nasty.
Welcome to Germany.
Yeah. Yeah. This explains a lot about me, actually. But yeah, I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
They're also super creepy. Like the costumes themselves are genuinely unnerving.
They are, and they're pretty elaborate as well. I mean, if you search
cosplay,
it really is.
Yeah,
and it's frightening. I mean, I would not want to be in that alley with those guys with switches hitting people. Which, incidentally, one thing that I wanted to bring up with regard to the switch or the birch rod in particular, which Krampus is often portrayed with and using to throttle or beat some poor kid senseless, is there are intimations that the birch rod is a part of initiation rites for sort of nefarious purposes.
Mm.
So it's like a signal to people who know of such things that of his dark origins, which I thought was creepy.
It is creepy. And also, isn't that like a frat? Don't frats do beat each other with? Isn't that a thing?
It is.
I don't know. I didn't go to college.
No. My college didn't have frats.
Yeah, I was going to say, what were your initiation rites like? What do you got? What do you have there about? Or do you have anything about his companions?
No, not much about his companions.
Okay.
What do you have?
Nothing.
Okay.
I just was curious.
I didn't know he had companions. That's pretty interesting.
I mean it's, there's...
like little spin-off creature type things, or...
So one of the companions is the African American man or African American.
Oh, okay.
I think it's just an African man that accompanies him, and then he beats him occasionally. I mean, it's pretty. Yeah. It gets pretty.
Zvort Piet.
That's probably it.
Yeah, AKA Black Pete.
Yep, that's it.
There's a whole controversy about that ongoing in the Netherlands.
So I'm curious to learn about that.
Well, I mean, the caricature is very much of what we would think of as blackface.
Blackface, yeah.
And people still dress up like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a growing movement to sort of downplay Black Pete.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's sort of your pushback that you might expect of people saying it's harmless fun and don't rain on our traditional parade. But I think the vast majority of people realize that having a Zvort Pete celebration is probably bad taste.
Not a great idea.
Yeah.
There are... sightings of Krampus now taking place. Did you do any research into this?
I expected to run into that, but I didn't. So if you know of any
cases, I didn't want to just wholesale steal these because most of them were on other podcasts or videos. So I don't have direct like recitations of what happened, but there are sightings that seem to be going on by people of what would appear to be Krampus around the time of Krampusnacht. Now, if they're the hard thing to tell here, and it's interesting to me, it put me in the mindset of like, well, we could be witnessing sort of the birth of a whole new form of like folklore, or, you know, like, I mean, Krampus has been around forever, but when people start claiming they're actually seeing him and things like that in the modern day, I almost feel like we're sort of witnessing or another abominable snowman or something, you know, like one of these cryptids we talk about all the time. Or Jersey Devil came to mind because there's some similarities there. But I thought it was interesting that the characters become so ingrained in pop culture now that there are, you know, people who are claiming to see it.
Yeah, it begs the question of, you know, which comes first. Is the folklore there because there's a creature there, or is there folklore and then people see something that matches the folklore? And with the media, that just gets more accelerated. And I think that brings out the, you know, just the history of Krampus himself is tied into the media more than people might expect. I mean, of course, there's the folklore that stretches back over 1,000 years, but then there was, you know, sort of a suppression of Krampus. And then in the, like, the 19th century, there was a resurgence.
Well, we're going to talk about this, almost this exact thing in the next episode, the ghosts, where, mm-hmm. Where you saw the sort of tradition of ghost storytelling becoming very popular, but then Christmas itself is almost deteriorates to the point where people aren't really celebrating it anymore, and then it kind of comes back around. Some people credit A Christmas Carol, which is very much a ghost story, mm-hmm. with the sort of resurgence of Christmas. But there's you almost wonder if there isn't something about stories like Krampus that do much more to sort of heighten people's enjoyment or appreciation for these holidays, maybe, than people realize. Like there's something about a story like Krampus that helps people appreciate the holiday just in general, sure. a little bit more.
Yeah, why do you think that is? I mean, what the appeal of Krampus?
The
is
appeal of Krampus,
huge.
I don't. It's massive right now, yeah. too, and I don't know what it is, other than I always go back to the simplicity of something like the design of the character itself. Like there's something instantly recognizable about the coat, which looks very much like, you know, usually it's almost like it's a bizarro version of Santa Claus, and he's got the horns and the hoofs, and it's very much like a Jersey Devil. It's like if you cross the Jersey Devil with Santa Claus, you know, like all of a sudden you've got Krampus. And so it's gotta be the character itself. The story, there's nothing to it. It's the Christmas devil, and that's it. There's no really interesting mythology built up around Krampus himself, outside of the fact that he might be the son of Hela or Hell. So I don't know what else the popularity would be owed to Krampus being.
I think some
huge.
People.
There's multiple movies, by the way.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not just the one is great, but there's a lot of movies about Krampus.
And I think, you know, people who are of a mind to not be into sort of the sentimental angle of Christmas.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Have sort of
latched on
to Krampus.
Almost like
as
Jack
their,
Skellington. They
like
had the
an
same
anti-hero.
Skellington, you know? When Nightmare Before Christmas came out, I think a lot of like goths and stuff like that have really latched on to. Although there's almost like a weird, with Jack Skellington, there's almost like a, he's become more of a Christmassy, merry holiday figure than I think a lot of people realize. Like I know people that absolutely adore Christmas and are very merry and bright at this time of year who love Skellington. Mm-hmm. Krampus has none of those like warm, soft feels
right.
that something like Jack Skellington does.
Yeah.
Krampus just wants to beat children, throw them in a sack
in
and
a
carry
sack.
Them off.
Yeah. And I think that what's interesting is that even if people adopt Krampus as sort of the anti-hero of Christmas, they can't say that he's like an anti-commercial
no,
figure.
No, this is very commercial.
Because in...
There's Funko Pops.
Yeah, right.
Once you cross that line...
Yeah, exactly. And that all started in... After 1890, I think it was, Austrian government had a lockdown on the postcard trade, mm-hmm. and they relinquished control of that.
Did
so
they?
That,
oh, literally
yeah.
they did.
Oh,
okay,
so
I thought
any,
you were
no,
a joke.
Any company could come in after that and release whatever postcards they wanted to, and Krampus became
public domain.
Huge seller And that just went everywhere to the point where those are the sources of a lot of those old looking images that you find online today, mm-hmm. are these postcards from sort of the beginning of the industrial age.
Wow.
And they had two basic messages on it. And I love both of them. One is greetings from Krampus. And what accompanies that, those words generally, is him stuffing kids in a sack, or like forcing them down into a fiery pit.
Well, that's the thing. We mentioned this early on. The Krampus scene in the old imagery is actually a lot more disturbing than the modern day Krampus. Because
mm-hmm.
I think the old Krampus doesn't have that sort of like modern day Merry Santa amalgamation going on. It's a very creepy, demonic looking goat mm-hmm. man.
Right.
Stuffing children in a bag.
Yes.
Who were bad. And I mean, like, this is what I don't get about the pushback against Krampus, I guess. It's like, it's all sort of built up around, it's like kids in my neighborhood making jokes about not going out in the woods after dark or the Minerva monster will get you. It's the same idea, only it's Krampus telling kids not to be bad, or Santa telling kids not to be bad, or Krampus is going to get them. Like, it's still built around make your kids behave, or Krampus is going to get them.
Exactly. And that's why the first postcard style was greetings from Krampus. The second was be good. Mm. So, yeah, absolutely. Krampus is the bringer of the law. He's the Christmas enforcer.
Mm-hmm.
And
now I got an idea for an action.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, he is, he's not that far away from Santa Claus. I mean, in appearance, yes, but in sort of his general message of toe the line or bad things will happen, they're very closely related. Yeah.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.